Hey everyone, welcome. This is Stephen from Phase One Trading, and we are on episode 10 of P1 Talks, and we're live. So before we get started, I just want to drop a quick reminder. Don't forget to like and subscribe to our YouTube channel if you find our content helpful. You can also follow us on Twitter as well under the handle at Phase One Trading, and you can search the show using hashtag P1 Talks to get up-to-date insights from our trading community. Once again, that's at Phase One Trading. You can also visit us at phaseonetrading.com for more information about our community. Now, to give this episode some context, I have a little bit of background myself studying and growing different forms of mushrooms from gourmet to psychedelic. So I'm pretty excited tonight to have someone that's part of a game-changing movement, in my opinion, highlighting the mental health benefits of psychedelic mushrooms, or in this case, truffles. You may know him as I Am Toddy Tickles on Twitter, CEO of Red Light Holland, Todd Shapiro. Todd, thanks for being here with us.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I love doing this stuff, to be honest. So it's actually my pleasure. And again, I'm very grateful.
Yeah, we definitely appreciate you being here. And I'm super excited to talk about all things mushrooms. I just want to get this out of the way really quick. Where did I Am Toddy Tickles come from?
Yeah, it's pretty funny, right? The CEO of a publicly traded company, market cap over $100 million, and his name is I Am Toddy Tickles. This is the deal. I don't hide from anything I ever did in the past, and I sort of never compromise myself for what I do for a living and what I've done. And in the day, I used to do sort of very high-level radio, you know, speaking to millions of people, big market share radio program. We used to have a lot of fun on that show, sort of grown up a lot from it, but again, sort of zero regrets in terms of the past, but you just kind of move on and maybe wouldn't do some of them again. And part of that was a name that came up, which was called I Am Toddy Tickles, and it was sort of an exaggerated character of myself. And if anything, it was actually an old impression of this like dude I used to play softball with. And it was sort of an accent I used to do or an impression. And funnily enough, like when Twitter started back in the day, I forget when I signed up, maybe, 10, 11 years ago or whatever. I just went with that name and I never realized, what it might mean down the road, because not a lot of people did when Twitter first started up. So I Am Toddy Tickles kind of stuck. And the weird thing is, and I'll be very honest with you, Stephen, is that it's so cheesy in a way, because part of the problem with Twitter, and it's good for me, and I think it's good for you, I believe you have one, is superficial, yeah, and really as meaningless as it is, you have a blue check, which shows you're verified. Right. And listen, I think the verified symbol does, it's not about getting followers. It's not about bragging rights or anything. That's all bullshit. But what it is good for, I find, is it's very good when you reach out to people. For some reason, they respond to you a lot quicker if you DM them, like, oh, they got a blue check. So if you go and change the name, you lose the blue check. So I actually wanted to change it to even I Am Toddy Truffles now. But so I'm trying to figure out on a business level, if I want to communicate with people or get in touch with them, I do find that you get a better return rate, response rate, if you keep the blue check. So we'll keep the name and we'll keep the blue check and roll with it.
Yeah, that's great. Tickles, as long as it's verified, I can trust a guy named Tickles.
And if anything, Tickles are very harmless. I mean, my wife loves her back tickles, I can't help the fact that my wife loves my magic touch. So
that's great. For some reason, I'm picturing Elmo dancing on Sesame Street when I read your name. But yeah, I actually have a similar story, except I'm not very famous on Twitter. My original name was Farty McPoopants, and the guys thought it wasn't very professional, so I had to go back to P1T Professor. But I don't know
which
if I'm verified.
Great, by the way. Yeah, I mean, and you're doing Twitter well. I do follow people, and it's interesting in this day and age, especially of stocks and stuff. And people got to be careful of what Twitter platforms they do follow, especially if anyone's ever giving investment advice and stuff. Just make sure you always do due diligence. And I even say that with my own company, obviously, like always talk to a financial advisor, always do due diligence, and don't just ever look to something because someone tweeted it. It's insane, and especially if they don't really put a face to the actual profile. So, you got to be careful about that stuff.
Yeah, we were, our group in general has just been talking about some of the activity in the SEC lately. They're coming down really hard on some of these stock gurus on Twitter. And actually, I think this is a really good opportunity for me to just disclose something, which is I have traded TRUFF, which is TRUFF. That's the ticker in the United States for Red Light Holland. I have traded you a few times in the past, and I actually own shares right now. So anybody out there, take my enthusiasm with a grain of salt. And like Todd said, do your DD.
Oh, cool. And to be honest, it's maybe a good time for me to disclose that we paid you $1 million for this interview. It's insane.
I appreciate that. You know, I'm looking at McLaren's right now, actually online as I'm talking to you. So,
and just so people know, that is a joke. That's a joke. Steven was kind enough to reach out to me with the blue check. So I got back to him and totally unsolicited interview. And I'm just grateful to be here. As you know, I love to have a great conversation and I appreciate you letting me do it for free.
Cool. Yeah. I wanted to get something out of the way right out of the gate, because I saw a press release this morning and it seems like a kind of a milestone. I just wanted to give you the floor to just explain what happened today and if there's anything you want to add to the press release that I saw come out.
Oh, I appreciate it. Yeah, it was a very significant day for Red Light Holland. We've really had a great, how many months have we been public for now? I guess since May 28th, so about 8 months or whatever. I believe that this company has really showed people some very interesting ways to generate excitement, especially because we always went out and said, we want to provide access now to psilocybin and we want to be able to do it responsibly. We want to do it with education. We want to do it with information. And of course, we want to at the same time brand it. And some people were kind of, whoa, you're going to brand psilocybin? I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what I'm going to do. But we also have a very serious side to our business. And one of the things that the whole serious side is about how do we get to other markets? How do we open up these legal routes? And it's not easy, obviously, because there's a lot of restrictions and you got to do things very carefully through a lot of compliance and a lot of back and forths, and not everything comes overnight. It's not like I'm selling you a granola bar then, you know, starting the next vegan company that can just get it into any convenience store. So we do things very carefully, and that's why we have an incredible management team with an incredible board of directors, incredible advisors, and these are the cream of the crop when it comes to success and also doing things. The common theme is about a regulatory process. So today, after a lot of work, quite frankly, we successfully completed the sale and importation of our iMicrodose packs, and those are the psychedelic truffles, and that was under Health Canada approved psilocybin import permit. And we did that in partnership. We were working with Seacrest Laboratories and Shaman Pharma. And this is a big deal because we've done a lot of research, and Stephen, maybe you've seen things that I haven't, but I believe that this is the world's first ever. If you think about it, this is a branded package of magic truffles in a microdose fashion that got across borders to get to this lab. And I don't think anyone in the world has ever done that. So when you talk about a significant day, and for Red Light Holland, of course, its management, and we'd like to think for our shareholders about doing our very best at always to increase value for them. We think that this just sort of sets a really big precedent, and we're excited sort of for these next steps. And we love being able to say that we're breaking down kind of barriers, we're ending stigmas, and these are groundbreaking moments and ones that we're very proud of.
That's great. And yeah, it's awesome to kind of check that box on your logistics, you know, distribution chain. So what kind of next step, I guess, would occur? Like we've got product in Canada now, like what's next steps?
Yeah, I think the idea with this is just to show, obviously, within that regulatory framework that we could get product across international borders, and we've done that. And then what are the next steps? Well, it's in a lab, right? So I can sort of tell you, it's always boring. I can tell you kind of what the press release says and what we're planning to do through that. That's the most difficult thing, by the way, about being the CEO of a publicly traded company is you can only sort of bring information to the market at the same time it's been announced through a press release. But ultimately, you know, there'll be phases here, and we plan to look into sort of the truffles, and this is sort of an exciting opportunity to have it in a lab and look at different phases now about could you develop different viable ingredients of it to sort of address what the requirements are for clinical trials or for patients who are getting these special access programs, which you've seen the Canadian health minister provide for those who are end of care and very sadly terminally ill, and of course those with severe trauma. So one of the things when it comes to that, to again, to the best of our recollection, is they've allowed individuals to have access to psilocybin, in that case, magic mushrooms. They always say we're magic truffles because that's how we can grow it legally in the Netherlands through that legal framework. But Have they ever actually said that anyone can provide it to them, or where do they get access from it legally? Where can they grow it on their own? Can they get it from a company? Because we all know it's still illegal to grow it on your own. It's still illegal for a company in Canada to sell it to people. So we're trying to show everyone and show the world that, hey, we can get our product here where we're doing it in one legal place, get it over to another legal place through international borders, like I discussed earlier. And then maybe can we potentially try to get it to those that have been permitted it? So, you know, there's long-term goals here, and I'm not saying that anything's been concrete or anything's written in stone, but of course there's always a bigger plan.
Right. All right. I mean, I think it's like you said, I haven't read or, I mean, at least detected anything across the industry where I've seen psychedelic mushrooms or truffles cross international borders. So you're definitely, you know, kind of, at least from what I'm seeing right now, this is a first move, and it's setting a precedent. I think it's really awesome. And I mean, there are so many countries. I've listened to a couple of your other interviews. I know we've got, who's kind of getting close to legalization. We've got Austria. I think you mentioned Jamaica. I was just reading Australia as well is discussing right now. It's February through March. Australia is talking about legalizing psychedelic mushrooms and MDMD. So just kind of like curious that it's starting to kind of spread in terms of I don't want to say popularity, but the stigma is starting to be, I would say it's starting to be challenged openly. It reminds me a lot of cannabis in the early days of the cannabis movement.
Without a doubt. Feel free.
No, go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say that the conversation is starting really all across the world, except for some of the more conservative countries, clearly. But if you think about where cannabis was opened up to and how people felt originally, how cannabis could be prescribed through a medical doctor without really studying exactly everything there was to do with the cannabis plant. And as we know, there's very few sort of patents or IP around cannabis. There's a few, but not many. And when it comes to magic mushrooms, and listen, I'm not a government official, so I'm not speaking on behalf of any government in any part of the world, but you have to think to yourself that the social movements these days that are really very powerful, and people who are sort of demanding much more natural substances, natural occurring psilocybin, to, without making any medical claim, to help them. And anecdotally, we're hearing story after story after story. So I'd like to think that governments are saying, well, we saw what happened with cannabis. It's not like we're sitting here and crime's increased and there's all these issues and stuff. And I think they're starting to look at magic mushrooms and psilocybin going, well, people are getting it every day illegally, just like they were getting cannabis. I mean, it's undeniable. It actually makes me chuckle inside to know how many well-branded, by the way, I'll say, because I'm someone branding psilocybin, but there's a lot of underground websites that are doing a decent job of it too, that are doing it completely illegal though. And then you can go on Instagram and see, you know, 22-year-olds post about how they tried this microdose product, and yet they're so proud of saying they got it in Canada, they got it illegally, and they're telling their thousands of followers that they're using it. So there's not like this fear anymore of, I'm a 47-year-old guy, I'm not sure how old you are, Stephen, but you know, when I smoked cannabis in the day and I was 18 years old or 19 years old and we're at the end of high school or going into university, I mean, we did it in someone's garage when we knew the parents were home or in like a back alley. We were friggin' scared, man.
And
that fear, in my opinion, is gone for a lot of youth and a lot of progressive countries and a lot of progressive areas in certain countries. And I think that our mission here as a company really aligns with those individuals that are saying, we want to use it. And we're saying, well, we want to be able to get it to you, but we want to make sure that we get it to you. Again, I always go back to this, and it sounds very repetitive, and I hate to sound kind of like a big promo machine right now, but it's got to be about education, information, and responsible use, because at the end of the day, it's still a touchy subject. It's a very sensitive topic. And as well, I mean, there has to be careful use, and there has to be at least people around you if you are using it in higher sort of these hero dosages.
Yeah, absolutely. And I definitely want to touch on my kind of hero dose experience and kind of see, you know, because I don't really have a whole lot of insight into microdosing. So I'm kind of curious what the differences are. But I feel the same way, you know, and we're in a modern Western culture that really doesn't kind of trust or condone, you know, I would say shamanistic or spiritual kind of experiences from you know, altered states of consciousness. So it's interesting. And this is derived from, you know, an organic substance. But you're right. This is an incredibly touchy subject. Do you feel like, you know, what kind of, if you were just to guess, I guess, about like a time frame, I mean, how long did cannabis take, you know, to kind of roll out? I just feel like this is going to come a lot. This could come a lot quicker because it is associated with, in my mind, like when we talk in our trading group about the cannabis sector, shrooms are in, we talk about shrooms in lockstep with that. That doesn't necessarily mean they react price action wise all the time with cannabis, but I definitely feel like shrooms have kind of taken to an attachment to cannabis just because it's kind of like the next breakthrough in medical intervention with just, just an alternative form of mental health care.
Yeah. And again, I got to be careful. You know, I wish sometimes sure. I was just talking to you as like I had potty yeah. tickles back in my radio days, because it'd be a lot easier for me to tell you a lot of things that I really believe in. But I could tell you a lot of anecdotal stuff, and I'll get into that in a moment. But when you tell sure. me or ask me, I guess, when do we think things will be legal, sort of what you're saying, or maybe will they ever be, you know, at that prescribed model? I mean, the answer is I can't tell you that. But what I can tell you is this, and we all know this, that there is a mental health crisis going on, that the Canadian yes. government has already said, and it's a precedent setting thing that they've come out and said, that for those who are terminally ill and those who have severe trauma, that they can have magic mushrooms for anxiety. That's what the Canadian government has said. So maybe now you think to yourself, well, while that's very beautiful, because we want everybody to be taken care of, we want everybody, especially towards their end of life, to be able to sort of tolerate that. And I can't even imagine what stresses and anxiety they go through. And of course, you know, all we want is well for those people who are in this very, very tough situations, and including their families around them. But, you know, maybe there's others who are just saying, well, I have issues too. And magic mushrooms have worked for me, and magic truffles have worked for me. So I think what you'll end up seeing is a lot of people saying, well, you've set a precedent, so maybe can we use it too? And the government, in my opinion, has opened up a door for that conversation, at least. And then back to cannabis, like you mentioned, cannabis, it took some time. I mean, cannabis, the real big movement was in about 2001. And they started to allow it for compassionate grounds and for medical access. Some of that had to do, again, with terminally ill. Some of that had to do with a patient sadly suffering from AIDS. And they sort of expedited that and pushed that through. And it took a little bit of time. Obviously, we didn't become legal until 2018. But those 17 years, there was a lot of big, powerful movements that we think will expedite this next movement. And again, I'm not projecting or predicting, I'm just saying what my opinion is. And I think a lot of people right now are probably listening going, well, that kind of makes sense. And it makes sense because you're probably having listeners right now who are thinking to themselves, well, I do magic mushrooms, or I know my buddies who do magic mushrooms. So on top of it all, why wouldn't the government want to collect tax dollars on this stuff? Especially in times of need where tax dollars have been hurting, lack of tourism, of course, COVID crisis has really crushed a lot of revenues for a lot of different countries. So they might be looking for alternative revenue streams as well.
Yeah. I mean, who isn't right now, first of all? And it's almost like in Colorado, where I'm from, our public, you know, a lot of our infrastructure is paid through cannabis tax at this point. I mean, I don't have a number available to me readily, but we make a lot of money off of taxing cannabis, and it goes straight back into the state, into education and into roads, infrastructure, stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, it's almost like this goes without saying, this is exactly what happened during Prohibition. And I used to call cannabis the modern day Prohibition. But, you know, when you tell people they can't do something, it's just going to make things more difficult, I think, on society. I mean, it's just going to make people want to do it, even if they're not sure. You know, it becomes more exploratory, I think, than grounded in a place where there's science research behind it. And we can show efficacy, and people, like you said, are starting to talk about it openly and not scared to talk about it. Like, I'm not scared to talk about psychedelics online openly now, whereas maybe 5 or 10 years ago, I totally, like, I probably wouldn't mention it because I would think like I'd get in trouble. Right now, I believe it's legal to possess in Colorado, actually, but I'm not sure what the finer details around legalization are. It's definitely not, we can't sell it yet. It can't be sold and bought. But that's very interesting. I kind of want to get just into the psychedelic experience, a little bit of what I've experienced, a little bit of what you've experienced. I recall this was a previous interview. You mentioned your psychedelic, a past psychedelic experience as seeing the world through a child's eyes. And I just kind of, I have a very similar recollection. So I took the first time I tried psychedelics, I did 3 dried grams of psychedelic mushrooms. And it's for me, it was like filters were kind of just removed from reality. Like I got to see more of reality. It, very strange. And my perception of time was altered. I felt like I had been gone for days when it probably only lasted about 4 to 5 hours. And of course, this was a macro dose. And I mean, I came out of that with the only way I can describe it is for the next year of my life, I kind of had a, it's almost like you just get reset. There was just a reset. It just felt like my pathways, neurological pathways were just, I was given the opportunity to, you know, build a new, almost like a new character of myself, like reinvestigate what was meaningful to me. It was just a very introspective, and complicated experience. But I'm just curious, you know, what kind of experiences have you had in the past, mixed experiences? And also like just microdosing, how does that kind of compare to what I just described?
Oh, for sure. And let me talk about some of, I guess, the hero dosing that the macro dosing that the terms are used. When we were young in sort of, you know, late high school and college, we just call them gotten tripped out with buddies. You know, you'd get your shrooms and everyone would have a different method of eating it or taking it. And if someone put it on a pizza and some would steep it in a tea and others would just eat it raw and go and you know, get right in there. And it's funny, I actually haven't talked too much about my past experiences of magic mushrooms. And that might've been my fear of starting a publicly traded company and, you know, being the CEO and thinking that maybe that might hurt an image or actually add to a stigma. And over the last couple of months, I actually haven't been asked this question in a while. And I'm glad I've asked it because if I was, I always felt like, what the fuck do I have to hide, to be honest at this point? And, right. For me, so annually, we would go, my father has a cottage still, in it's Muskoka. It's an area outside of Toronto, Canada, where we're from, and it's just beautiful nature. And, you know, back when my dad sort of, and my mom built this cottage at first, it was really a lot more, about nature than it kind of is today. You know, now obviously you got the bigger boats and you got obviously Wi-Fi everywhere, and it was a little different. So we kind of had this cute, it wasn't a cabin, it was still very nice, like, you know, full electricity and obviously a full septic system and stuff. So it was a great place to get away, but it was a great place to really be close to nature. And we would do it annually with my buddies and really good friends of mine. And I can tell you that I find that as you get older, you have so few memories in life of the things that made a difference in your life. And I think everyone can kind of count on 2 hands what those were. And what are some recently for me? Well, the birth of my children, and before that, getting married, the night I proposed to my wife, which was a beautiful night after a very tough time in my life. And then you think of these times that what else sort of stands out. And if I think back to my late teens and my 20s, for some reason, like my biggest, most vivid memories are those nights with my friends when we were taking magic mushrooms. And I think the reason for that is everything that you talked about. We had these moments of when you're sort of immature teenagers and, you know, these silly college kids. And I don't think there's a lot of depth sometimes at that age. And it's not, I'm not, this isn't like ageism or anything. So in case people get offended easily listening to me, I'm just telling this is how I look back at it now. And, you know, we were doing silly things and life was about trying to meet ladies and trying to have a good time and have a good laugh and kind of get by in university or college. None of us were really huge academia, but, you know, we all have done very well since then. And those moments of really getting introspective. And I don't think we went in it at the time really with the proper set and setting. I don't think that was the intention. It was more just an annual thing. Let's go with the boys and have some fun. And I think every single time our friendships were stronger, we bonded through those experience of that trip. You know, we would go from room to room in the cottage, not that it was massive, and everyone had its own different experience from the room that was in the basement that was colder. And it brought us back to ideas of sort of being outside, and, you know, some were shivering and some were talking about just warmth and providing warmth and providing friendship and support. Like, it's amazing what comes out of the little elements in those rooms. Even I'll never forget being in the bunk bedroom where we had a stucco ceiling and it looked like reverse mountains coming down at us. And we thought to ourselves how beautiful and artistic that was. That it brought this little sort of stale bunk bedroom with an old kind of moldy smell to it, quite honestly, to life. And we all connected through these moments. And then my favorite moments, and not to get too, so, you know, too long-winded here, I'm sorry, but it is the sort of the point where you're coming back to you, and the psychoactive ingredients are subsiding. And that's to me when this perspective comes into play, where you had some laughs, you maybe even had a little bit of fears, but you had support systems with your friends who got you through those fears. And you talked about everything, and you talked about it being a little bit altering and a little allowing your brain to pivot. And this may sound silly, but maybe there's some who listen and take in hero doses and agree. It's like it's a graduation of yourself. Like 3-4 years of college can't even give you the experience sometimes of one night of going, my goodness, I got to kick my ass in the gear here because there's something I'm lacking. There's something I'm not doing for myself to make me a better human being, an evolved human being, a harder working human being. And you sort of see some faults within yourself. And then it's beautiful to come out of it and go, well, how can I help change myself? And all of our friends through those experiences, seriously, what we just had a, it was sort of like, you know, being in this movie and then you come out of it and the end of the movie is you end up a bit of a better person. And it's hard for me to explain other than that.
Yeah. I mean, just to echo is, I think it's really interesting because the experience is probably very subjective and personal to each individual. But like you said, most of your friends kind of came out of it with some new insights. And that's kind of what I'm telling you, that's exactly how I came, when I came out of it, just like you were describing, there was actually clarity. There wasn't some sort of, you know, I'm not coming off of a, you know, some sort of a hard drug where I'm like, where am I? I need to get more of this stuff. And like, what happened? It's exactly the opposite, which is like, wow. I mean, I still, to this day, that was 12 to 13 years ago for me. And to this day, I remember almost every moment of that trip, even though it felt like it took forever. The recall, I think, is really important, because something like cannabis that might give you a little bit more of like a foggy sense neurologically, I didn't get that after I did mushrooms. And I have done I would consider it a microdose, like I've steeped it in tea before a couple times. But same exact effect. You know, it really does feel like you just went to work for several days, and the information that I got from my experience, you know, it's impacted me to this day. I still think about it. So it's just, I'm not sure how, so let's talk a little bit about the microdosing application now. Cause I think what you were kind of describing is still macro. So in terms of micro, how many times a week would somebody feasibly be taking this? I'm sure this might vary from person to person, but you know, would people expect a similar experience as what we're describing, you and I are describing, or be a little bit less intense?
Yeah. So, and first off, now all of a sudden I got to put my corporate self back in the picture. I was getting like this really happy tear in my eye, being nostalgic and thinking of all my buds and literally having the best moments of my life. And again, that these are anecdotal experiences. I got to be careful of saying, you know, this about the medical claims and all this. These are just, you know, things I did 20, 30 years ago. And I'll get to the microdosing in a moment. By the way, that's so wild for me to say almost 30 years ago. Like I often don't think of myself as someone who's turning 48 in a few months, but I guess time flies. What I wanted to say is, and this is neat, talking to you about it is actually, you know, very therapeutic in a way, because I'm doing it publicly. And in a way, the reason why I think it's therapeutic is because even when I did do this, you know, 20 odd years ago with friends, these conversations weren't being had really at all, man. And if they were, it was like, you're with your buddies and you kind of came out of it and you said, wow, that was a great experiment. I mean, we thought we're going in to just have a big party here, but we're really sort of took a dive into ourselves here and feeling better about ourselves and feeling motivated to tackle life here. And the hardships aren't as bad as we thought the hardships were. And we're just going to go here and make the most of life and enjoy it and love it and live it. And these conversations now that you and I are having, and that you're seeing a lot of the great pioneers and advocates, but really more everyday people now who aren't so as involved in doing it a lot and really studying the science or the even really truly looking to what the benefits are, the studies that are being done now. This is very helpful to people because it's a conversation at least that can start now. So you actually might go into an experience and make sure you do it. If you do it legally, I've got to say that, and do it with a guided therapy. You might have to do some sort of clinical model wherever you can get it. I would just say at least it, what a neat way of even going into a trip now, thinking that there could be these more positive outcomes. We didn't even think that way back in the day. So kind of neat. Sorry, and I'm getting off topic, but it was just, I never, that's just the first time I ever thought of it like this. And thank you for allowing me to open up. The other thing I would say is that, you know, when it comes to microdosing, though, I would say it's a very, very, very different experience. The microdosing, again, without medical claims, and I'll say this anecdotally, and I encourage everybody, really, just go and like hashtag microdose on Twitter, on Instagram. I'm sure you can find stuff on Reddit. Just read what people say and kind of formulate what these real individuals, just like you and me, and just because a guy like me is a name, I am Toddy Tickles, and has a blue check to his name, I'm telling you, I'm the most salt of the earth real guy and real person you're ever going to meet. These are just experiences from people who have life in front of them. And life at the end of the day, honestly, if you're a billionaire or if you're going through some real hard times, and I know it's easy, people say, well, the billionaires, they get all the money in the world. Well, listen, there's a lot of, you know, dark billionaires who have these dark trauma or these different places or the stresses and the anxieties. And what I'm trying to say is we're not too dissimilar from one another as people. And I think most importantly about why I bring it back to microdosing is because if you read about people microdose from all different parts and walks of life, you sort of get a very similar response, which is, oh my goodness, that really allows me to focus. And that's helped with my anxiety. And it's not the anxiety goes away. It's not like I'm changing or I'm someone different. It's not like I'm drunk at night and completely forget about that stress that day or getting fired at my job or getting a big confrontation with my spouse or something. I had to leave the house to go for a drink. I think it's about you're actually just a little bit disconnected from your own mind and you're a little bit more focused, just a little bit, in my opinion, on the outside elements around you, which in a way, which is what I think happens, is you take a little bit of off of you, you put a little bit onto whether there's even a snowy day in front of you, whether there's a buddy that you want to pick up the phone and call to, and you're more sort of concerned with what they're up to. And to me, that's the most important experience, what I find in microdosing when I do it. And of course, I microdose legally in the Netherlands. That sounds like a big promo, but it's true. That's really where I've focused a lot of my microdosing when I've been there. It's the idea that it parks my anxiety and allows me just to focus a lot more on other people and a lot more on other things. And I think a lot of the anxiety we're getting, I'm not a psychiatrist and I can't make these claims, but I think that we live in our own heads these days. We want likes, we want retweets, we want recognition in this sort of online world. And if we're not getting it, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves. And a lot of people say that of all different age groups this day and age. And that's not what's important. What's important is connecting to the things that are around us. And it is amazing when you do just a little bit, live outside of yourself a little bit, how that can alleviate, in my opinion, some of the anxieties. And these are my experience where just allows me, like you said earlier, to see sort of light through a child's eyes, which is, oh, wow. You know, that little piece of art that I would have never noticed because I'm so ingrained in my own mind and all the stresses of work and trying to grow a company and trying to manage people and blah, blah, blah. It's like, oh, well, I walked right by that piece of art. Where did that art come from? Let me have a moment, take a step and look at it and appreciate it. And that to me is what's really important for me with microdosing. And I think if you read about it, you'll hear a lot of people share very similar experiences.
Yeah. Oh man, coming back to the through the child, I mean, through a child's eyes, to me, if I could, you know, redefine that, it's and not to sound tacky, and I know this is probably an overused phrase in modern culture, but it really does put you in the present moment, and I think that's kind of what captures what you were just describing. And it's also interesting because psychiatrists, you know, they prescribe drugs in a lot of cases, not all cases, but in a lot of cases, drugs are prescribed to get the patient to simply be receptive to new ideas. And so here we go, like with a new product and a new option coming out, and everybody seems to be, you know, following the same wavelength. I mean, a lot of this, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but and this might be a little too technical, but the pineal gland in the brain, you know, there are many different ways to kind of get that activated. You know, you can do ayahuasca. There are a lot of different substances out there. I'm kind of curious where you see that fitting in the spectrum of mental health solutions. You know, like we've got transcranial magnetic stimulation, ketamine infusions. Do you see this kind of joining I'm obviously, yes, I understand forward-looking statements are sensitive, but you know, is that kind of the hope? Is that where we're kind of headed here, in terms of your vision?
I would say that ultimately we all recognize that there's a mental health crisis. We also all recognize that a lot of the prescribed medications that big pharma have provided those who are suffering really have not worked. And some have in great in cases, and that's amazing. But many haven't, and all people have to do is sort of sadly probably look to friends or family and all know someone who is severely suffering and is severely and is not being cured from that severeness. And so is there other options? And I think that's a good way for me to phrase it carefully. Are there other options? Are there other options now that we can look back to thousands of years of clinical studies that maybe haven't been documented in the way that scientists and the medical community thinks that they should be documented, that where people are going, wow, okay, wait a second. Yeah, this has been very effective for thousands of years, and that there's books written about it, and there's drawings were put, you know, that sort of represent it, and of course there's communities that were brought up on it, and there's even some people believe, you know, religious writings that have derived from it. So, we could explore that all we want. What I can lead you to, though, that is science, is we have an amazing advisor in our team. And I think that everyone should go and Google her, because instead of me saying it, I think she needs way more recognition. I mean, she's a lady that is quoted by Robin Carhart-Harris. And she has an incredible YouTube video on how, you know, psilocybin and the 5-HT2A receptors and the connectivity, as you speak of, and what it does and the function and the tools for growth of what psilocybin represent. And to me, this is a really important YouTube video. Anyone can go and find it. Her name is Sarah Hashkes, Hashkes. And it's like a 20-minute presentation that she's provided. And why I bring her up is because we work very closely. I mean, she is amazing with Red Light Hall, and we do a lot of work with her company called Radix Motion. And what we've tried to do is take what her big long report is, which can get a little bit confusing and a little bit daunting for some who don't understand big words, quite frankly. And I might be one of them. And we've condensed it into a virtual reality experience. And what's really neat about this virtual reality experience called Wisdom will be on the Steam store on March 17th is the expected date of release. So what's that, tomorrow?
17, yeah.
Yeah, and we're selling it for I think it's like $4.99 or $5.99, like a super affordable option. I think it's $4.99 US, so about $5.99 Canadian. And people will be able to experience what Sarah Hashkes and her team over at Radix Motion have developed. And I think it's like a quick little hit of the information that you're speaking about why is psilocybin potentially doing certain things to our brain that science is looking to support. And again, she's a neuroscientist. She studied in the Netherlands. I mean, this lady is an absolute genius who's also a tech whiz. She's really the most perfect synergistic partner a company like ours could have, because she also believes in the providing of access and she believes in the tools for growth, and she believes that there should be access now responsibly. So we completely align, and this, and it's an easy sort of cop out and an easy sell for me here. Like, oh yeah, go buy something that's on the Steam store if you have a VR headset. But I assure you, this is an incredible immersive experience that is educational. And by the way, Stephen, the reason why we hired Radix Motion in the first place over at Red Light Holland is because, back to what I was talking about when we first started, you know, just sort of mentioning what the business model is about information, education, responsible use, is that in smart shops in the Netherlands, we thought, well, shouldn't we be really self-regulatory as a company? Shouldn't we kind of write our own legislation, so to speak, as before even governments do this? And when people walk into smart shops, we'll instruct the clerks to give the patrons this virtual reality experience, which provides you this knowledge, provides you a bit of the science, provides you the information, and it also provides you a mimicking of a microdose experience. And then the idea of it is, if you're not comfortable with what you learned, and if you're not comfortable with what you experienced, guess what? We actually don't think you should buy our product. And it's really about, again, we're writing our own legislation, and that's why this is developed. And I'm ecstatic to the fact that, hey, you know, listen, let's be honest, as a publicly traded company, we've created an alternative revenue stream, but I'm also really excited just to share this brilliant 4 or 5 minute piece that Radix Motion has created, and the idea that people are going to get a great education of it and have fun doing so.
Todd, and I just want to like pause for a second. I know I have a few guys for P1 management in the background. If we can grab that link for the Wisdom VR thing, or if it's not out yet, it's going to be posted to Steam tomorrow. Just wanted to pause and mention, we will definitely be putting that link out just so our listeners can kind of get some context and check it out if they'd like to. But I think that's a great idea, you know, giving just people a general preview of what it might feel like, so they kind of know if this is something they want to get involved in. I have a really great curveball question for you, Todd. One of the management just asked me, would you let your children microdose, obviously at an appropriate age?
It's a great question. So man, this is awesome. So yeah, the answer is yes, I would. Not now. I have a 5-year-old boy and I have a 1.5-year-old daughter, Sawyer and Scarlett. So no, not now. No, I wouldn't right now.
Right.
Years and years and years ago, I was suffering from a bit of depression and tremendous amounts of anxiety. And I tried Ativan. And it completely messed up my mind. Like it felt like I wanted immediately to be addicted to this thing. And I've never really had addictive quality. I was kind of that kid that could, when I say kid, college kid, or that could have a smoke and then, you know, not have a cigarette for another 2 weeks. Like there's something about me that never really had these addictive qualities. And Ativan was that first thing that was, I remember going, wow, I need another one. It's going to help me sleep. But it just sort of somehow got in my mind that way. And I took it for about, I don't know the exact day. So, you know, I might've said a different time frame in another interview in the past. So, you know, don't quote me on this, but call it a week or 10 days. It wasn't like a large amount of time. And at that point I thought to myself, I don't want anything prescribed. So I can tell you very honestly that, I have not taken a prescribed medication in a very, very long time. And I grew up in a family, by the way, and I don't know if you did, Stephen, that when you went to the doctor, they just gave you something. They're like, oh yeah, take this or take that. Or, here's penicillin. You got this. You got that. You know, oh yeah, you got lumps in your throat. You're going to need the, you know, erythromycin. I don't even know how to say it. It's like, okay, well, what about just, you know, maybe some vitamin C and some rest. And the States, by the way, and you're in the States, I really don't want to stereotype here. So I hope this doesn't come across as sort of obtuse or anything, but man, the prescribed model because of the private healthcare, I feel like, you know, doctors are going to kill me, but whatever. I feel like they're totally abusing the system half the time and just kind of want the you know, I don't know if they got royalties or their money for doing that. And it is absolutely wild to me, the amount of prescription medication out there. So bringing this back to my children and bringing it back to my experiences of natural occurring substances. Yeah. When my kids get into their late teens, and if we were in the Netherlands and they opened up to me about maybe having these sort of struggles with major anxiety or ADHD or you know, I'd like to think they don't have a traumatic childhood. I think we're having a good time, other than the fact that, you know, I work all the time. So I don't see them a ton, but, and maybe that is impactful actually. And, I would say that I would sooner give them a tiny, tiny, tiny piece with I would call it, you know, maybe because if you think of adult dosages, which, you know, anyone can say are about 100 to 200 milligram per how you microdose and how you decide to do it, you know, maybe cut that in a fifth or a tenth and just to see. I mean, I believe there would be zero contraindications, and maybe I'm ignorant for saying that, but I don't care because that's what I believe.
Mm. I would honestly tend to agree with the information I have now. I would agree with that. Once, I mean, we're both not, you know, we're both not scientists, but, you know, from my experience, from the details and experiences from my friends, everything I've read online, I would tend to agree that this is a little bit more approachable than some synthetic drug. And like you said, it's just, I mean, the variety and range of synthetic drugs at this point is just out of control. And it's going to take a serious turn in, I mean, a social sentiment to kind of come back to, I think, like you were saying earlier, these historic, I mean, thousands of years old practices that just haven't really been, you know, they haven't been put into a lab setting. And so it excites me to hear that, you know, you've got this in a lab now, you're kind of looking at the growth properties and how, and the chemical properties, how it affects the mind. I mean, I think this is really, really great stuff. Do you,
well, and think about this, not to interrupt you, sorry. I interrupt a lot actually, because I get these ideas and before I leave them, but,
get it out. Yeah.
If you were to ask individuals 15 years ago, 20 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago, would you ever give your pet CBD product?
Would I give my grandma a CBD product?
Exactly.
Who was suffering from cancer a year ago and used CBD. And I'm talking about the most conservative folks in my family have even come around to this. So it does show up, sorry to interrupt you, Todd, but that was a promising kind of signal to me that people are starting to change their mind about this stuff just in general.
Well, and isn't it wild that we still feel uncomfortable kind of saying these answers? And of course, again, you know, they're CEO of Red Light Holland, publicly traded company, Todd. And then there's just like Todd. And Todd has this massive, God, it's so gross that I just referred to myself as Todd, but then there's me. And the me is just, I'm a progressive thinker. I'm sorry. And I look to natural occurring substances and I think to myself, well, in careful dosages, there's zero fear. And it'll be really interesting to see what is talked about as we move forward. Where will psilocybin end up? Will it end up ever being prescribed to children carefully? Will it end up with animals? And by the way, you know, ketamine was with animals for years. And now, you know, obviously we're seeing all these ketamine clinics pop up. So right. I mean, people are maybe listening going, wow, this is insane. Like, there's not a chance. And all of a sudden it's go, well, wait a second. This stuff can really open up. There is a potential and a possibility, and maybe the answers have been in front of us this whole time. And I'm not going to say that there's perfect answers because there's always complications. There's always contraindications, but at least it's a foot forward to exploring the potential. And that is the most important thing right now. And I do want to say something on record here though, Stephen, while we're talking, it's really interesting. Sorry, I just moved my chair. It's really interesting right now because there's this sort of, I don't know if you've been following some of the news with about the patents and Compass and Atai, how they're talking about psilocybin and trying to get patents on it and trying to kind of control it and trying to speak to the Oregon regulatory bodies on how this sort of movement moves forward with Measure 109. And it's sort of, I guess, upset people. And it's really interesting because I took it as a different approach because I do not think that big pharma should come in and control psilocybin and the aspect of psychedelics and how we eventually get it out to people if we can get it out to people at all. And the where it's changed my mind a little bit was through what I felt was a bit of a kind of a greed approach. That's the way it came across to me. It was sort of this greedy approach. I thought about what I've said on record in interviews about how, you know, kind of against big pharma in a way. And I might've alluded to that. I wasn't saying that big pharma shouldn't exist. I was just maybe negative towards big pharma. And a lot of it is because of my just personal beliefs and anecdotal sort of usage of things that weren't prescribed to me from synthetics. And I thought, man, you know, why is it that that these types of companies can be one way, but maybe I'm only promoting natural occurring access now. And really what I want to say on record is there's really should be room for both. I mean, there's billions of people in this world. And you mentioned your grandmother earlier. Well, listen, I don't know if my mother would ever take a magic truffle, although my mother's maybe a bad example because she's a super progressive, free spirit, awesome lady who's really actually allowed me to have this big, strong, powerful voice because she's always had one in life and sort of promoted that both of her children should. She's such an amazing figure and charitable figure, by the way, just really, a mentor to me more than just a mother and a guider. But some maybe older folks wouldn't want to take a natural occurring product. They would actually maybe prefer it in a prescribed medicinal model if this breakthrough therapy actually proves out to be something. And yet then there might be a 25-year-old who goes, well, I never want to take that pill. I'm never going to take a pill. I hate pills. I've seen what opioids have done to my uncle. I don't want to touch them. And they would rather a magic truffle or a magic mushroom. So really, if we think about what the psychedelic community should stand for, and I truly fear this man. And again, I'm really opening up right now. And I hope this doesn't bother anybody or stir up any controversy. But as a lot of publicly traded companies now get into the space, like if we're not all kind of working together here to just do our best to promote what we think potentially can help a mental health crisis, then we're actually all doing each other a disservice. And I wanted to get that out because I really feel that way. I feel there's room for everyone. And I hope that everyone also has those same sentiments or else it ends up becoming about greed. And if you're an investor in a greedy company, well, maybe it'll do well for your portfolio, but is it going to do well for your heart and your passion and your emotion, your empathetic side? Maybe not. So these are just things to think about.
Yeah. And it's really cool to just hear that, it's very apparent to me and probably to most of the listeners, like the passion you have for the product you are working with is very apparent. I want to ask a couple Q&As because I'm seeing my guys in the background are telling me some people are shooting some questions at you. Would you mind just doing a couple of questions from the live audience?
I have no issues doing some questions. I will answer them the best I can. And if it's company related, it'll be stuff I've probably announced or it's in my prospectus or we filed in the MD&A, but I will do my very best to answer them. Yes.
Okay, cool. So let's start with just in terms of microdosing and its relationship with substance abuse facilities. Do you see that? Do you see a correlation there? Do you see microdosing possibly entering to that space?
There are studies being done right now, not by my company. I just want to make that clear that mm-hmm. are talking about how psilocybin can potentially wean people off of the harder drugs indeed. I got to be careful what I say, man, on this question. I can't make medical claims here. I can tell you maybe the way I can phrase it that if I had a buddy of mine and someone that I was close with and I felt that maybe they were abusing substances, I would probably want to say, hey, pop down in the Netherlands with me for a month and let's go use small dosages of magic truffles and let's just see where you are in a month from now. And I'll leave it at that. I mean, that's, I would attempt to do that as a friend.
Yeah. That's a good enough answer for me. And yeah, please don't answer anything you don't want to. But Todd, I feel like so conflicted right now because I want to tell all of our listeners to don't forget to like and subscribe, but that would go back to us saying, we're so into our own.
No, dude, minds. We got to do that. Listen. Okay. Steven, everyone right now, is at the end of the day, this is the harsh realities of life. Okay. We all got to make a living. It sucks, right? Because it sucks because the system we're in and obviously, listen, I'm a publicly traded company. So at the end of the day, we have to be capitalistic or else we're not increasing shareholder value. So I say it sucks because there is a way. And I promise you there is a way, and I've spoken to incredible individuals. There is a way to be able to promote yourself, promote what you're doing, promote whether it's products or services, and do that well without being in your face too much, without being Austin. What's the word I'm looking for? What's that word I'm looking for? With just about being you know, too much of a megalomaniac. There's ways to do it, and you always got to draw back attention, especially, I'd like to think this is captivating and engaging conversation. And obviously you're very good at what you do to get out what you've gotten out of me. It's the key to an interview, is to be able to, you know, have a nice, and I did this for 20 years, so I know, but to be able to have a great tone and kind of just have a great flow of a conversation where you go back and go, wow, that guy exposed a lot to me. He said more to me than he said to anybody else in the past. So you did your job, man. I'm telling you that. So of course, draw people back to like your channel and go and watch your channel. And everyone needs to do that, because the harsh realities of this world is we all want some attention, because the attention ends up relating back to dollars, and the dollars end up paying the bills. And that's just the way the system is cut out. I think that the balance of it is, what kind of substance do you do in between? And again, you're putting out great substance. So that's what's important.
I appreciate that. I appreciate the feedback. We're going to probably get wrapping up here soon, since we're coming up on an hour. I do want to ask you one more question and then just kind of give you the floor if there's anything else you want to speak about. But this is kind of a roundabout what the question was online, and something I've been thinking about too. Now, I heard you previously talk about the truffles that you're growing must be sold kind of as is. They can't be altered in any way. Is that correct?
Yes. So okay. The way we're legally allowed to say them, sell them, sorry, in the framework in the Netherlands, is in its raw, unprocessed, natural form.
Gotcha.
Yes. So, and I think what you're getting at is, of course, we're seeing sort of this ground down. We're seeing it put into powder. Mm-hmm. We're seeing it put into chocolate. We're seeing tinctures. Again, anywhere you're seeing that, it's illegal. Okay. So, and by the way, it's not like this is super proprietary knowledge, or I think it's very obvious that a lot of people have the technology to do this stuff. As a publicly traded company that's, you know, heavily scrutinized, we're just not going to delve into that, because we're doing everything completely by the book. So we can go to every government that we approach, like we have, you know, getting our product into Canada, and like we have getting Anvisa in Brazil to allow our the import of our product into that country of a couple hundred million people. You know, we're doing it by the letter of the law on purpose. You know, we're getting legal opinions, but I think at some point, I think answering a question that maybe you haven't even asked yet, but at some point, I think the idea, of course, is to have different sort of ways of consuming magic mushrooms or magic truffles. And all anyone has to do is go and look at, especially here in Canada, I'm sure in Colorado, where you could buy, you know, your gummies in a legal form. You know, who would have thought that would have existed even 10, 15 years ago? Not many, but they do now.
Yep. And just a slightly off topic, but I'm stuck in Phoenix right now because of the snowstorm in Colorado that just happened. And recreational here looks like recreational sales out here for cannabis looks very similar to what it looked like in Colorado in, I would say, 2015, 2016, where you're talking bars on the windows, security guards, you know, walking back and forth outside, just really high. Everybody's on high alert, bulletproof glass. I don't see that very much in Colorado anymore. That's really kind of eased up. People treat it like it's just an actual, you know, it's like you're walking into a CVS. So it's just interesting to kind of see that progression and evolution of acceptance. And like I said, just to kind of tie it up, I really think we're on the same trajectory here. Once again, this is just my personal opinion, but, I can tell you that my group, and myself included, we really do think this is a new sector. This is a new sector entirely, and it's going to get, in my opinion, it's getting a lot of eyes on it this year. So this could be a great year for just awareness. I think we can all kind of feel it. You see it in the news. Obviously, we're talking about it here. It just feels like it's becoming more prevalent. So I definitely applaud you in the work you're doing, and it's really cool to just hear how passionate you are about this work. So Todd, I'm sure you're busy these days. I just want to thank you again for sharing your story with us. It's been great having you on. Would love to do this again. So thanks for being here with us.
Oh, I appreciate it. And honestly, this is actually my comfort zone. So this is what I did for 20 years and did it really, you know, I hope it doesn't sound like I'm, you know, bragging here, but I did it at a pretty high level and interviewed a lot of amazing people. And it's actually part of the reason why I did a pivot, because when I was interviewing a lot of people and did this long form conversation style, especially the last 7 years of my radio career, 6 or 7 years, is you end up learning from people, and you get to go in depth into their brains, and you get them to open up and sort of share things sort of like I'm doing today and what you do on your own show. And you learn about people's kind of struggles, and you learn about people's issues, and you learn about people's anxiety and performance anxiety, especially if I was, you know, talking to a lot of just performers, from, you know, artists to musicians to you name it. And people are in a tough spot, and a lot of people are in a tough spot. And it helped me pivot to want to try to make that difference. And honestly, man, I'm very hard on myself. Like, I'm a very driven individual. I'm a very competitive individual, and I'm trying to back away from the competitiveness a little bit, because I think it actually detracts from what the goal and the focus is. And I don't need to necessarily worry about what others are doing. I think I just need to worry about what we're doing and making sure that we're continually growing and trying to do our very best, especially in a world of capital markets, to increase you know, our shareholder value. And I guess what I'm getting at here is it is just very important to stay true to you. And I think it's very important to work hard with a passion. And if you were to ask me 8 months ago, or about even a year ago, when I first closed out my first raise, which was a real struggle, man, it was tough. And it was right when COVID was starting, so people were nervous and everything, but people were still going out. There weren't these lockdowns yet. I think it was just about a year to the day where the lockdowns happened. And we got our first initial tranche of close to $4 million to sort of get to the next step of doing our best to take this company public, which there were no guarantees either, because it was still in a psychedelic sector, or working with, you know, legal access of magic truffles. And, you know, people weren't even sure when they first gave me that money. And then to look back where I am a year from now, with over $30 million in the bank, with being able to say that, you know, we successfully got a product that is grown from our farm in the Netherlands, in Horst, Netherlands, a couple hours outside of Amsterdam, that we do sell online, and it is sold in smart shops. But now we have that in a lab in Canada. I mean, it really is about, it's about working to try to get to these goals. And I'm not going to say that you can make anything happen in life if you just sort of think and will it and work hard to get there, but it's very surreal for me. And maybe it sounds vulnerable, and maybe that's not the thing that CEOs of publicly traded companies should ever show, but man, I'm just really proud of our team, and I'm really proud of everyone who supported our mission. And I think the idea that sort of we're trailblazers and have actually literally done something that hasn't been done in this world, it's pretty significant. And there's some great quotes and motivational quotes on this whole kind of idea that if you try to make change in this world, there's not always success doing it. But man, if you can do it, whether you succeed or whether you fail, imagine the fact that you've tried to get there. And I sound passionate now, and I am passionate because I'm living in a great day where we just made a huge announcement. But I'm trying to speak to everyone who's listening right now to say, if you have an idea, go and make it happen. Because I'm telling you, if you work hard enough and tell enough people where you believe it can be, and do calculated, obviously observational, you know, you got to show a growth industry, you got to get people to invest for a reason. They want to make money. That's again, the cold hard facts about it. Don't give up, because I'm a walking live story right now of that you can have early success. And I hope that in our case, we're just at the beginning, and that this mission is just starting. And I'm excited to go down the path. And it's tough at times. It's nerve-wracking. It's a lot of hard work, a lot of regulatory, a lot of back and forth. But you just got to keep going in life and try to make this difference. So I hope everyone listening is, you know, has these, you know, these same thoughts, and I assure you, you can make something happen.
Yeah, that's awesome, Todd. I mean, that definitely resonates with me. And, you know, we knew we wanted to talk to you months ago, whether or not you knew about it, but we did. And it's just about, you know, putting those thoughts into reality, putting it to action. And, you know, if you had said no, okay, well, we gave it a shot. But here you are, and we're having a great conversation. So, Yeah, I really appreciate you sharing tonight.
If you don't mind, I'll tell you a real quick story. Go for it. I've interviewed a lot of comedians in the past at a very high level. I'm not sure if you've heard of the comedian Bert Kreischer. Have you heard of that? The comedian?
Yes, I have.
You know, Bert's the machine, right? And Bert will tell you he's hugely successful. I mean, a guy who's on Rogan, you know, numerous times, not just one or two. And I interviewed Bert in the day when I was doing a show on Sirius XM, and I'll never forget. I kind of had this approach where I said to Bert, I go, well, why are you doing my show? Like, you're so big. You don't need to do this show. And, you know, we had a significant amount of listeners, but we didn't have the Bert Kreischer following. And he said in his big Bert Kreischer kind of way, and I'm terrible at impressions, but I'll do his, I'll attempt to do his. I'll say it. He's like, I don't care how many listeners you have. He goes, I'm taking them all. I'm taking them all. Like he goes, because every person you reach is an important person that you can sort of share your message to. And it doesn't matter if it's five or it's 5 million, it's still a few people, and it's still ones that will listen. And I'm getting back to what I'm talking about with a lot of anxiety in the world. If you don't have the biggest following, but you want to get a podcast going, or you want to do these fun little videos on your Instagram channel, but you're worried because you don't have enough follow, just do it, because it'll resonate. And even if it makes a few people laugh or it informs a few people, depending on what your message is, it's still about you're providing something that people can be engaged by, and be proud of it. Don't let the numbers decide if you're proud of it or not. So, dude, of course I'm going to step on for you reaching in. By the way, the blue check helped, but of course, you know, of course, thank you.
No, that's great. And we appreciate the feedback, and this is just super inspiring for us, and we're having a great time with this show. And, you know, that's what we're all about too. It's not just about, name and status as well. Like we've also brought on a lot of, traders who are just in the process of kind of discovering their own craft. And it's just fun, to get into people's heads and see how they're operating and share their perspective really with the community. Cause that's what we're trying to do here through this group. So I really appreciate you being a part of it. I do want to just mention really quick. We do have another episode coming up to everybody still listening. It's on March 30th with Alex Cutler. His handle on Twitter is @AlexCutler247. We'll be talking pretty much everything stocks with this guy. So make sure to tune in for that. I also just want to send a big thanks out to you, our listeners, for supporting our content, getting actively involved in the retail trading community with us. Todd, once again, thanks so much for being here. Really appreciate you having you on, and hope we can do this again.
Yeah, no problem. And then you don't even have the blue check, because I just went on Twitter. I can't believe I said yes to this interview. What is wrong with me?
It might have been Eric. I'm a very defunct Twitter user. I have no idea what. One more thing before we jump off the air. Todd, stay on with us. We want to chat a little bit before you jump on. So don't.
Cool.
Don't
and I'll do it. I'll do the self-indulgent plug now. @RedLightHolland, @IAmToddyTickles, and obviously always do your due diligence and always speak to financial advisors. But we are a publicly traded company. Trip on the CSE. And Truff on the OTC. And if you have any German listeners for some reason, we're 4YX on the Frankfurt, on all the different exchanges out there in Germany. So man, and please read up on what we've done, and feel free to go to CEDAR and read about our cash positions and kind of how confident we are in terms of moving this business forward. And we're very excited at doing that. And thank you for your time. I appreciate it. I'll hang on right now, but thank you again.
Absolutely, Todd. Thank you. And just a quick reminder as well, don't forget to like and subscribe to our Phase One Trading channel here on YouTube. And you can always check us out on Twitter as well, where we're always posting some live commentary on the market. And that's @Phase One Trading. So thanks again for everybody for listening in. We'll check you on March 30th. See you later.